Lani Gwala on 702.
For the curious.
Live.
Online.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
DSTV.
And 92.7.
And 106 FM.
12 minutes now after 12. 7 minutes after 12, beg your pardon. A very good afternoon to you. It is Wednesday, the 7th of November. You're listening to the Xolani Gwala Show. We're on 702 in Cape Talk. And we're coming to you live from our Johannesburg studios, keeping you in touch with your world. And there's just so much happening in your world at this hour. So in Parliament, right this minute, members of Parliament are dealing with the fallout as a result of the VBS great bank heist. We have a reporter monitoring that, but just so much has come through there. One of the big questions that is being asked in Parliament this afternoon is whether or not VBS Mutual Bank can still be saved. The EFF in particular has already told the committee that they just don't understand why the Reserve Bank's immediate reaction to the report around VBS has been to say perhaps the bank should be shut down when other banks in difficulty dating back to 1990 have been saved. That was the EFF's argument a short while ago on this issue. I wonder where you stand. What do you think then about this particular argument? A couple of people have been talking on this issue. The Reserve Bank's Deputy Governor Cuban Naidu has been taking some of the questions there. As you would have heard in Eyewitness News a short while ago, he expressed serious doubt about the ability for the Reserve Bank and others to recover much money from the failed VBS Mutual Bank. But also Terry Mutau, senior counsel, who is the investigator and the author of the report, has been answering some of the questions. So we'll hear from Lindsay Dentlinger a little later on about what exactly is happening. And by the way, it started quite shaky. The hearing. One of the things that happened at the beginning is that the EFF asked the chairperson of the committee, Yunus Karim, to recuse himself here. And we'll hear from Lindsay Dentlinger what was that application all about. That's coming up shortly. It's 8 after 12.
The Xolani Gwala Show.
But still with this issue of VBS, I see right this moment that the Limpopo Premier, Stan Matabata, is briefing the media about the VBS Mutual saga and what action his government will be taking against those implicated in the looting of the bank. Remember that 8 municipalities in Limpopo collectively deposited 1.2 billion rand with VBS. So he is talking about what action then they are taking. Certainly we'll be hearing about that. And our Clement Manyatela is monitoring that briefing and he will talk to us a little later on this issue. And also still in Limpopo, remember, senior ANC officials directly implicated in this report. So we want to hear what the chairperson of the ANC in the province, as well as the premier, Stan Matabata, has got to say on that issue. 9 after 12.
702. Xolani Gwala. 12 to 1.
But we start here in Gauteng, where, as a result, of course, also, or at least partly, of the VBS debacle, there are now problems with the West Rand District Municipality. Some workers there are on strike. They are complaining about the payment of employee benefits, including housing allowance and medical aid. Remember that a week or so ago, employees held councillors hostage, demanding salaries which haven't been paid for months. Now, according to the unions, they say part of the reason why the municipality is in such a serious problem financially at the moment has really just been the failure to properly manage the funds, including the ill-conceived decision to invest over 77 million rand with VBS Mutual Bank. Now, the ANC's deputy chairperson in Gauteng, Banyaza Lesufi, has been tasked with the responsibility of trying to resolve the ongoing debacle at the West Rand District Municipality. And he joins us on the line now. Mr. Lesufi, good to talk to you this afternoon. Hello.
Good day, Mpepeto. Are you well?
I'm well. Are you well?
I'll be fine one day, Mpepeto. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for coming on. Well, what is the current situation now with the strike by some of the employees at the West Rand District Municipality?
Well, the strike is still on. We've been engaged in negotiations since last week, Wednesday. We had discussions yesterday. Unfortunately, when we were on the verge of concluding some of the critical elements of our discussions, we were held hostage as well. There's a team that is negotiating. We had to run for our lives and run to the police station for cover, which is unfortunate, and there's no need for that because we are trying to resolve this in first. But fortunately, the leadership of the union joined us at the police station and apologized on behalf of their members for that misconduct. So where we are now, we are trying to find a mechanism of getting the salaries paid for November. But beyond that, the future of this municipality, and I can tell you without any shade of doubt or fear of contradiction that the future of that municipality looks dim. And so we need to find a way of saving that municipality.
Wow.
It relies only on grants, and their roles and functions are not clear, and it's owed by institutions that are not willing to pay it. So we just need to find a mechanism, and that's where we are now.
Let me just go back to the incident then of you being held hostage, because it would be look, I mean, it's getting really violent there. It's the second time that officials are being held hostage in about two weeks or so. What exactly happened? Yeah. What happened?
Well, you know, in this kind of discussions with labor, with organized labor, they present an issue and then you go and consult with your principal. So when we came back to report back on the issue that they wanted us to go and consult with our principals, when they didn't like our report, they then decided to lock all the doors and didn't permit us to go to the bathrooms, didn't permit us to go out of the building, and we felt we should be there until we agree to the issue that they presented on the table. Fortunately, because we've got people that are working around us in terms of security arrangement, they alerted the police, and the police came in and invaded the building and set us free.
It could have been worse. Clearly, there were threats of violence there.
Yeah. No, the behavior is completely unacceptable, but we are relieved that the leadership of the union condemned this. We were there when they addressed their members and told them that it's not in their interest to do what they're doing to us, because we're genuinely trying to resolve the impasse. And it's near. We really believe there are two or three things that we need to tighten up. If we can tighten up those three things, we'll be in a position to ensure that municipal workers, they've got their salaries for November and December, and most importantly, the citizens of that area would have services coming out of all those local authorities. So we are not far from reaching an agreement. It's just this kind of conduct. You know, people believe sometimes, which is something that I really don't appreciate, Kolani, that for you to get the results, you must be violent, you must destroy buildings, must threaten people's lives. Because what we are about to reach now, if we reach it and reach a resolution, people will celebrate and say, because we held them hostage, that's the reason why the outcome is favorable, which is so unfortunate.
Let's just go back to what you were proposing. I mean, over and above the issue of salaries, there's an issue of third parties, such as medical aid, pension fund, union subscriptions that have not been paid for 3 months. What were you offering? How were you offering to resolve this impasse?
What we know by now, which is definite, the municipality need only, say, 16 million to go through this difficult period. And the municipality is going to get 66 million as part of their grant only on the 3rd of December. So we are definite they're going to get 66 million, which is going to hit their bank account the first week of December. But the reality is that they need to pay these third parties by end of business today. So we're trying to arrange a compromise with third party institutions, because these things are going to hit workers hard. For example, if you have a life policy that is going to mature and suddenly you can't get it because you have failed to pay that policy for the last 3 months. So we are speaking to those institutions, those third party institutions, to say, just be tolerant. The money is here. We've got paper. We've got proof that this money is going to hit the bank account of this municipality on the 3rd of December. So you'll be the first one to get it. So don't terminate. Continue to render the services. But they say that they've been rendering those services for the last 3 months and nothing happened. So we're using our credibility now. We're using our credibility now to assure them that it would be in the best interest of everyone if the services are rendered. So
just a final one on that, Mr. Lesufi, because again, you're using your credibility, and this is what suppliers are saying. The reality is that the people running that municipality are the ones who should take responsibility for this, but we haven't seen anybody, at least not publicly, who is taking the fall for this, because it's them who have mismanaged the funds. It's them who have brought the municipality where it is today.
And so we're having a twin approach. We've got a forensic report of who is responsible for this. That report is ready. Unfortunately, there's one or two people that are refusing to appear. So we've taken a very firm stand. We've given a firm deadline. If they can appear within that forensic team, they can appear and have allowed that forensic team to interview them, are going to take this as a action. So we're not only entertaining this process of negotiating with workers, like one to identify why this municipality is not financially viable. So we've appointed a team from National Treasury and Province. We're intervening in terms of short term. There is a permanent team that is dealing with this, but it's also a forensic team to identify the culprits, because we're not going to defend those culprits. People that have planned this municipality in this crisis must really feel the pinch, and then if needs be, they must spend their time in jail. So that process is also on.
All right, that's Panyaza Losufi, who is the deputy chairperson of the ANC here in Gauteng, talking about what happens then with the West Rand District Municipality. As I mentioned, a little later on, we will be talking to our Clement Manyathela. He's monitoring Stan Matabata, the Limpopo Premier, who is also talking about then what happens in his province, where so many municipalities invested so much money with VBS, 8 municipalities, 1.2 billion rand, and who then is taking the responsibility in Limpopo. That's coming up a little later on. Your thoughts for me on 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. It's 17 after 12.
Kulani Gwala on 702.
For the curious.
All right, I'll look at your messages on my Twitter timeline, @GwalaX. But also remember, you can send me a quick voice note on 072-702-1702. 20 minutes now after 12. I see that yesterday, the health MEC here in Gauteng, Dr. Gwenda Mkhuba, issued a statement in which she is pleading with the public to assist the South African Police Services, as well as the Department of Health, in finding 21 missing life esidimeni mental health patients. Now, according to the statement, the MEC says, despite working with various state departments and law enforcement agencies, the department is determined to make a headway in accounting for the remaining 21 discharged patients from life esidimeni. Let's get more details about 21 people still missing after all these years. And we're on the line now to Dr. Kobi Maree, who is Director for Mental Health at the Department of Health in Gauteng. Dr. Maree, nice talking to you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Kulani.
Thank you. Well, 21 people still missing.
That's right, Kulani. We started with more than 100 patients. In February this year, we were down to 45 patients, and we're currently with 21 mental health care users that we are not sure where they are. The last 41 that we found, we all found with their families.
Okay. Are you suggesting that it is possible that these 21 may also be with their families?
It could be very possible. The challenge is that families moved around, so we do not get them at the addresses that we could get from Life Esidimeni when they were still there. But we are following up each possible link, you know, where they moved, where they went with a mental health care user. Most probably he's visiting people in another province. Then they're coming back. And that's why we haven't given up. We are again asking SASSA now to check whether any of these people are receiving SASSA grants, in which we might also be locating them.
Sure. And I'm going to talk to Jack Bloom in a moment of the DA, who raised a question about this matter in the legislature. One of the things that the DA has said, I saw them this morning, is that the problem is you don't even have all of the details of the 21. Some of them only have names. So how are you going to trace these people?
You're right. So we've got names. For some of them, we've got an ID number. Others, we've got a date of birth. And we're using whatever information is available. We're also looking at old photos in their IDs, if we can get that, in order to identify these patients.
How is it possible, though, that you've only got names only? Were they recorded like that at Life Esidimeni before they moved to these unlicensed NGOs?
Yes. Honestly saying, whilst they were busy with a project to transfer those patients out of Life Esidimeni, records were not well kept. So the little information we have, that's what we can work with.
All right, that's Dr. Kobe Maree. Let me just quickly, and maybe you might want to hold the line, because quickly I want to go to Mr. Jack Bloom, who is the DA's shadow MEC for health here in Gauteng. Mr. Bloom, good to talk to you.
Good afternoon. Good to be with you.
Thank you for your time. You say the worst case scenario, some of these people might have died and buried in some of these NGOs.
Yes, I think unfortunately there has to be a possibility, and that's why I'm pleased the Special Investigating Unit is also looking at this. You know, there might have been one of these NGOs that secretly buried patients who died, and I think we need to know if that's what happened. But the tragedy is we have so little information. You know, some of these people could have just died pure neglect. They might have been dumped somewhere. I think we need to do everything we can to make sure that we find out what's happened to 21 people. That's a large number. And it's more than 2 years after the second Niamey tragedy, and we still don't know what's happened to them.
You talk about doing all we can. Has the department doing all it can, do you think, in order to trace these people?
Well, I think they've woken up a bit late, because I've been calling for some time that if there are any photographs, they should be made available. The names should be made available. Any information whatsoever we have should be given to the public, and we should ask people if they recognize any of these people or know what might have happened to them. This should have happened a long time ago. I was the one earlier this year that laid missing person charges with the police, and I think the police have been helpful. And I think we need to call on all agencies, the public at large, give what information is available, and try and find out what happened to the missing 21 people.
Okay, and thank you very much. Let me just get a quick last comment, perhaps, from Dr. Maree. In terms of just giving out the pictures so that people can assist, why are you not doing this?
It's quite a challenge to give out names of mental health care users due to the confidentiality of patients' names and information.
So how then will the public help you? Because according to the statement by the MEC, you'd like the public to help you. But if the public doesn't have the information, it's impossible for us to help you.
Yes, the public can help us because we're following each and every individual up. So when we turn up at a house or information that we have, we then ask the public around. And that's how we got many of the patients identified, by following up with members of the community where they used to stay. And they will tell us where the family moved.
All right. To the both of you, thank you for your time. Dr. Kobe Maree, who is the Director of Mental Health at the Department of Health here in Gauteng, together with Mr. Jack Bloom, DA's Shadow MEC for Health here in Gauteng. I'll take your reaction. Give me a call or send me a quick SMS. It's 26 and a half after 12.
702. Polani's on Twitter at Gwala X.
So a couple of other stories, by the way, that we are tracking for you today. I'm looking at the Rand, and the Rand seems to be excited by the developments following the midterm elections in the US. I will tell you a little later on how the Rand is performing, but also what are the implications of the outcome of the midterm elections in the US. That's one of the stories that we will be looking at for you here on the show. Stay with us.
702. Polani's on Twitter at Gwala X.
All right, some of your responses on Twitter. Let me start with Kabelo MG, who says at Gwala X, if I was a beneficiary of VBS looting, logically speaking, I'd also fight tooth and nail for the bank to be saved. VBS would be my proverbial goose that lays the golden egg. That's according to Kabelo MG. Manqoba is responding to Panyaza Lesufi, the ANC's deputy chair here on the province, who spoke to us a bit earlier on about what's going on in the West Rand District Municipality, and that they, including himself, of course, as an intervention team, were held hostage as well by the workers yesterday. And Manqoba Mazibuko says, well, the workers made the correct decision by keeping those responsible hostage. This is the kind of language authorities understand. Hey, isn't that violence? Isn't that promoting violence, encouraging violence, Manqoba? That's Manqoba. But Lesego Petlelo, on the same issue, says, this is what happens when an organ is filled with scoundrels. There are still learners who need to be placed in schools, but because Lesufi is one of the few that we trust, he must now play all roles. Where is the COCTA MEC? Where is SALGA in what's happening at the West Rand District Municipality? A lot of SMSs and messages coming in on that issue, and we'll certainly look at them a little later on. But for now, it is 12:30.
Polani Gwala on 702 and K Talk.
It is 22 minutes now before one. Lots happening on my Twitter timeline, @GwalaX. I will look at your responses to some of the stories that we've covered so far. But still to come here on the program, story that broke around 10 o'clock this morning. Former Gauteng Police Commissioner, Deliwe Delange, appearing in the Johannesburg Specialized Commercial Crimes Court. She served her last day as provincial police chief last Wednesday. And you may remember, if you were listening to the show on Thursday, I spoke to her about her resignation as the provincial police commissioner. And in the end, I asked her to give advice to whoever is going to take over from her. And one of the things she said was, be careful of temptations. There are so many temptations here. I'll play you that clip, actually, and then we'll talk to IPID about what it is that she and a couple of other very senior people within the SAPS are faced with in terms of their appearance in the Specialized Commercial Crimes Court. That's coming up in a short while. It's 11 minutes now before, I beg your pardon, 21 before 1.
The Kolani Gwala Show.
The Kolani Gwala Show.
On 702.
But we go back to the lead story on the show this afternoon, of course, just talking about different angles of the fallout following that great heist at VBS Bank. I reported earlier on that so much was happening in Parliament, a lot of people answering questions. So there are people directly involved with the report who are appearing in Parliament today, including the South African Reserve Bank, the author of the report, Advocate Terry Mutau, but also I see that Hawks officers are also in Parliament answering some of the questions from the members of Parliament. And looking at that story for us is our Lindsay Dentlinger, who joins me on the line. Lindsay, a very good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Polani.
So it's been a very long day then, in as far as this issue is concerned. But let's start with what is happening now. I believe that Hawks' boss has been answering some of the questions.
Correct. In the last 15 minutes or so, quite a speedy presentation from both the Hawks and the NPA, updating Parliament's Standing Committee on Finance as to where they are in terms of investigating and possibly eventually prosecuting people involved in this bank heist, as you've mentioned. Hawks boss Godfrey Labeer saying that the investigation is in full swing. They've collected about 65 statements to compile this document, a docket that they can use as evidence, and looking at a range of crimes, fraud, theft, corruption, money laundering, contravention of organized crime. Also, the NPA's acting boss, Celis Ramite, is also here. He says five prosecutors are currently working on the matter, but they're not yet at a stage where they can say who they will prosecute and what exactly they will prosecute people for.
All right. But let's just go back then to the beginning of the sitting. Earlier on, the EFF challenging the chairperson of Parliament's Standing Committee on Finance, Yunus Karim, asking him to recuse himself from the sitting. Why was this?
Well, you know that Yunus Karim is connected to the SACP, and there have been allegations that the SACP also received a donation from VBS Bank. Yunus Karim saying that the SACP leadership had made it clear over the weekend that they had not received any donation, and the EFF didn't want Karim to chair the meeting because they believe that he is conflicted. He dismissed that, saying he has the necessary assurances that the SACP did not receive money, and that he is certainly, in his personal capacity, has no connection to this bank whatsoever. And so he continued to chair the meeting, even though Floyd Chivambu, who wrote that letter to the chairman, is not present. And Bhusen Ndlozi is here for the party, and he was upset and felt that the chairperson was being dismissive of the EFF's complaints.
Speaking of EFF's complaints, it wasn't just about the chairperson, but also they complained about the quality of the report that was put together by Advocate Terry Mutau. What is he going to say in defending his report?
Well, Ndlozi doesn't believe that it's a very good piece of legal writing. As he put it, he says a lot of it seemed very in the lines of fiction, and also took issue with the fact as to why certain individuals are named in the report. In specific, as you know, the EFF taking umbrage with Brian Chivambu, Floyd Chivambu's brother, being named in the report, while Bhusen Ndlozi says others are named are not named personally in their personal capacity, but rather their company that they represent. Motaal saying he takes no umbrage whatsoever at people criticizing his report. He actually joked with the EFF and said he only holds 2 degrees and not a PhD, so this was the best writing that he could offer. And he's categorically denied any insinuations from the EFF that he might have meant specifically the EFF, singled out Public Enterprises Minister Pravin Gordhan, asking Advocate Motaal whether he had met with anybody in Treasury, including Pravin Gordhan, on this report before he issued it. And Motaal saying absolutely not. There had been meetings with Treasury and the Reserve Bank, who commissioned the report while he was writing it, but certainly there were no consultations and he didn't consult with anybody before finalizing his report.
Sure. And just finally then, the Reserve Bank's Deputy Governor, Kuben Naidu, also answering some of the questions about whether or not this bank can still be saved. What has he said?
It's really the feeling of MPs that the Reserve Bank has been too hasty to want to liquidate the bank. As you know, that liquidation application gets heard next week. Really feeling that more should be done to save it. That's not the feeling of the Reserve Bank. They're saying if anybody who has the money should come forward and try to save it, they would rather prefer that somebody get a new banking license and doesn't inherit the legacy issues from the bank. But not a very good picture or promise for those who have invested money. Kuben Naidu saying it could take years before they recoup that money, and if they do recoup money, it might be 20 to 30 cents in the rand that they will recoup, and really that it is poor people, pensioners, who are going to stand to lose from this bank collapsing.
All right, Lindsay Dentlinger, I must thank you very much. Much appreciated. EWN reporter monitoring sitting by Parliament Standing Committee on Finance, looking at VBS Mutual Bank and everything that's happening around it. Thanks indeed for that. Well, we'll stay with issues surrounding the VBS Mutual Bank, because the Premier of Limpopo, Stan Matabata, has been addressing the media about then what is happening in his province, and monitoring that for us is our Clement Manyathela is on the line. Clement, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, XG.
So what does Matabata say will happen going forward then? His province, with so much money from the municipalities that was invested in VBS Bank.
All right. So, XG, I have to say that I think the expectation from most of us and my media colleagues was that we were going to sort of receive the findings of the forensic report, which was commissioned by the government of Limpopo to look into the municipalities that have invested money illegally into VBS and obviously the officials that are implicated. We've been told that that report is not ready yet. It will only be made available, the findings, I should say, will be made available by the end of this month. But what the Premier has announced today is the suspension of several municipal managers and, of course, the chief financial officers, the Vembe District Municipality being the first one that the Premier spoke about. And he says the CFO there and the municipal manager there have been suspended in another municipality called Setakho Mutubatse local municipality. A decision will be taken tomorrow to suspend the municipal manager and the CFO. So you've got about 7 municipalities in this province that have deposited the money. We know initially it was 10, but 3 of those 10 have received their money back. So it's 7 right now that won't be getting back their money that they invested with BBS. And what seems to have come out of this conference is that the municipal managers and the chief financial officers of all these municipalities will possibly face suspension. The suspension of several of these officials having been announced in this during this briefing.
So I suppose the big question is, what happens to ANC officials such as the mayor of the Vembe district, who also happens to be the deputy chair of the ANC? What is Matabata saying about those people?
And not even just that mayor, XG. I mean, the mayors of all these municipalities, because it seems what the government of Limpopo is doing is to, just suspend the accounting officers. They're not looking at the political deployees of the ANC, and we're talking about mayors here. These are the people that possibly made instructions to these municipal managers and CFOs to invest money with VBS. We've already seen in the Great Bank Heist report about how this scheme was conducted. You had big political figures instructing political deployees to instruct their subordinates, like your CFOs and municipal managers to make these investments? And that is the first question that we asked Mr. Matabata. What happens to the mayors? And he says that answer will be, that question will be answered when the forensic investigation is done with its work. Obviously, what we will be looking very closely is, you know, what will happen to Florence Radzilani, because she's a mayor of one of these municipalities that won't be getting back the money from the VBS Mutual Bank. And I suppose another question, unfortunately, she was not allowed to do Q&As with him afterwards, after the Q&A session was done. I mean, one-on-one after with him. And one of the questions I personally wanted to ask him is he not going to feel a conflict of interest, given what we already know now about what he wanted to be of his relationship between him and Florence Radzilani,
yep,
who is the mayor of one of these municipalities? Will he act really without fear or favor, given, you know, the love that he's already declared to this particular mayor? And unfortunately, we didn't get the time to answer particular question. But really, yeah, the crux of this press briefing is this announcement of the suspension of some of these CFOs and municipal managers, and really the premier coming out and saying he hopes the bank could be saved. This is even though, you know, the great bank heist report was very clear to say this bank is rotten to the core and cannot be saved. But it seems they're still holding on to the hope of how the principles and the way the bank was structured needs to be saved and continued going forward.
All right, Clement Manyathela, looking at that story for us, I really appreciate it. It brings us to 10 minutes now before one. One of the stories that I'm hoping to quickly squeeze in before 1 o'clock is an interesting story that appears on Business Day today, the companies section. It is talking about Sandton City. And the story is showing there is still life yet in bricks and mortar retail. Sandton City, one of South Africa's premier shopping malls, is now fully let for the first time, having spent the past 3 years signing up more luxury brands than any other center in South Africa. The 45-year-old super regional center has zero vacancies, while other super regional centers are averaging 5.8%, according to the South African Property Owners Association. Sandton City also including 51,200 square meter of office space. So it's quite an interesting one. On the back of all of these discussions about what's happening to these malls, do you find that shops, retails are closing down? But it appears as if Sandton, absolutely no vacancy there. Do you go to Sandton a lot? Do you concur with this report here? Let me know. It's 9 before 1.
702. Kolani Gwala, 12 to 1.
All right. A little earlier on, we learned that former Gauteng Police Commissioner Delebo De Lange is appearing in the Johannesburg Specialized Commercial Crimes Court. She served her last day as provincial police commissioner last week. And of course, this has got a lot of people talking about what could it be, what happened. Has that got anything to do with her resigning last week? But interestingly, on Thursday last week, we spoke to her here on the program about her resignation. And she says, no, she just wants to spend time with the family. But let me just play you a quick clip about where she was giving advice to whoever takes over from her. What would your advice be to whoever is going to take over from you?
First of all, whoever that is going to take over from me, my first advice is respect the community. Work together with the community. Put measures and strategies and plans in place. This community of Gauteng, they are so wonderful. They will assist you. Don't promise them something that you're not going to do. Promise them something. They will give you information. Work on your information. Give them feedback. That one, they will work for you.
Sure.
I think it's a wonderful province.
But that's that's the one side of the story, the community. But what about the leadership of the SAPS? What would your advice be in relation to how the SAPS is being led?
The leaders in South African Police Service, Kolane, I will say, first of all, please be loyal. Stay away from politics. Stay away from politics. Be a police officer of your own. Integrity is one of the best things that you need to do. There are a lot of challenges, Kolani, as a provincial commissioner. There are a lot of challenges. There are a lot of also, what can I say? There are a lot of challenges whereby temptations, let me say, there are a lot of temptations. Be yourself, be loyal.
Temptations? What do you mean temptations?
I'm trying to say, Kolani, stay away from corruption. Let me say that in short. stay away from corruption. Do your job. Finish and climb.
There are All right, there you go. Stay away from corruption. Let's hear from Moses Dlamini, who speaks on behalf of IPID. Mr. Dlamini, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Kolani. Good afternoon to the listeners.
Please, firstly, can you confirm that the former Gauteng Police Commissioner appeared in the Specialized Commercial Crimes Court today?
Yeah, she's appearing with other generals and the service provider and the brigadier. They are currently in the court. They are appearing once they have appeared. We'll know what the court has to say about their appearance, whether there will be a bail application or what the process will unfold.
Okay, so it's happening. The process is happening right now. But let me ask you this. Why? What happened? What are the charges?
Well, IPID investigated allegations of fraud, corruption, forgery, and uttering. This is in connection with procurement irregularities relating to emergency lights, the so-called blue lights, amounting to more than 60 million rand. Of course, the details of the case will be ventilated in court as to what each of them or what role each of them played in this, and that will happen in due course, Kulan, but the allegations relate to procurement, fraud and corruption.
Just a quick and final one. The head of IPID, Robert McBride, has been talking about dozens of generals who should not be in the SAPS because of some of the crimes that they've committed. So these generals, are they part of those generals that Robert McBride has been talking about?
Well, you know, the IPID investigations in terms of this corruption involve very senior officials. As you know, that one of them is the former acting national commissioner, Khumutso Phahlane. The investigations, as they unfold, point to other senior officers or other generals, and we are quite concerned about the developments as we continue, we uncover more and more.
Okay, Moses Dlamini, I must thank you for now. Much appreciated. IPID national spokesperson confirming that the former Gauteng Police Commissioner Deliwe Delange is among the people that are appearing right this moment at the Johannesburg Specialized Commercial Crimes Court. She said, yeah, temptation. And clearly she, according to IPID, was tempted. But let me just quickly look at this story of Sandton City. And, when everyone else is talking about a struggle, that the malls are struggling to fill the vacancies, etc. Apparently Sandton City has zero vacancies. Why is this? We're on the line to Jonathan Sinden, who is the Chief Operating Officer at Liberty 2 Degrees. Jonathan, good to talk to you. Hi.
Hello, Kalani. How are you? And your listeners?
No, thank you very much. We're good, Jonathan. Thank you very much. Is Sandton an exception to the rule?
Sandton is probably one of the premium retail malls in Africa. And it trades exceptionally well against its peers. It trades, in terms of the industry metrics, it trades about 44% above that. And it's been, she's a grand old lady, Sandton, and she's been around for 45 years. And she continues to defy logic and reason. And as you can see in Sandton, you can look at all the cranes and all the building and all the construction around it. And Sandton, yeah, its footfall keeps growing, its trading density keeps growing, and we are very excited about Sandton. So, yes, it does defy logic.
It's interesting because, I mean, we're in a recession. So Sandton has got this ability to ignore the recession completely.
Look, Sandton, last year sometime when Stutterford went under, people were asking serious questions about Sandton. People were also asking questions about online and the impact of bricks and mortar versus e-commerce. We've, through hard work, through a lot of the work that our property manager does and Liberty 2 Degrees does, we've managed to fill those vacancies. We use, we've gone the route of fintech route where we've put camera-based technology in to track our customers, and we've worked out what our customers want. We know the demographic of our customer. We know when they come to the mall. and we're answering their needs. We at Sanson want to be the perfect host, and we want to provide the best offering for our customers. And maybe some of the other malls out there don't have a range and array of tenants that we do, but the demand at Sanson is high, and it's great. And we're very happy, and we love the assets, and long may it continue.
Fantastic. All right then, Jonathan, good to talk to you. Jonathan Sinden, who is Liberty 2 Degrees Chief Operating Officer, thank you for your time. Thank you for listening to the show. We'll be back again tomorrow between midday and 1 o'clock. It is indeed now 1 o'clock.